Oh, the horn. No.
In everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Well, crap. Tom, assess.
Man, I have thought long and hard about how I wanted to, what my first comment was going to be on this podcast. And I wanted to criticize the play calling and, you know, we should have called this play instead of that play and how all the momentum swings went back and forth. But man, I think it really comes down to this team has just overachieved. It would be easy to say anything else. You know, you like to call lazy analysis. Well, I think the tougher thing and the more true statement is this team was lucky to be where it was undefeated with a chance of a national championship, given the things we've talked about at the different positions during the season. And I think it's a team that has overachieved and got caught in a trap game.
Definitely a trap game. I 100% agree with that. Coming off the emotional victory at LSU late in the game in that environment, and then to come just right on the heels of that to play an opponent that, quite frankly, we've known that this is a style of play that gives us a little bit of fits. And so last week, playing as many plays on defense as we did to come into this game where they're going to run a hurry up, they're going to run a lot of plays, it certainly was a trap situation. That's an interesting take that this team has overachieved to get to this point. I don't know that I categorically disagree with it. We've talked about this being a team that we think Saban will really look back on fondly because of the leadership and the way that they've risen to the occasion. Just a little bit of a lapse here.
Well, let's just break down the overachievement comment for a minute.
Sure.
Even after the 19-point victories, we have been critical of certain things. We have, you know, coming into this season, you know, I wasn't real thrilled with the play of Anthony Steen in prior seasons. We were concerned about the play of the tackles on the edges. We were concerned about the youth at secondary and having to replace the youth at secondary. As the season wore on, you know, we got more and more comfortable. But even on the wide receiver position for a second, right? Our two biggest guys we were counting on was guys who really had not emerged in Kevin Norwood and Kenny Bell until the very end of the season, namely in the national championship game. And so when you look at this team and you look at how many young guys have been able to contribute, I think how well Saban recruits and the depth of this program has propped him up to this point. I guess a better analogy would be Bobby Bowden at Florida State in his heydays. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it was 14 or 15 years in a row that his team was finished the season ranked in the top five. And they just had the horses. And I think Alabama is getting to that point. Other programs would have lost a couple games like we did in 2010. This team has been able to overcome adversity. But I think the matchup of the Oregon light that we talked about, we finally got exposed. We got exposed a week ago, but it got really pronounced in this ballgame.
Well, and that's fair. And we've had some injuries as well with the DeHart and the Fowler. Fowler's a guy the last couple of weeks we've said that we're really going to miss. And the DeAndre White, and those are players that are missing the season. But we've got a number of other players banged up, you know, Lacey and Milner and Amari Cooper and Kevin Norwood is even missing times with injuries. So I think that's a fair line of discussion. I don't want to get too far away from the concept that also exists. If you're first and goal on the six, score, you win, why do you not run the ball four times?
Well, if you go back and look at the different Bama sites and the forums, That comment is 99% of the comments. And so my point is as you and I were watching the game, that was my first original thoughts. And I don't disagree with it, but I guess what I'm saying is Coach Saban wants to say, let's not worry about what play we should have called. Let's think about how we've gotten to this point. And he talked about, you know, the discipline to, you know, it was interesting in his coach's show. I found it very interesting in his coaching show where he made the analogy after he could cool off after the post game, where he talked about everybody's got to reset themselves here. And he said, players have got to trust the coaches that we are putting them in the right situation to maximize their probability of success. And he said, us as coaches have to trust the players that they're going to execute the plays. And then it was interesting. He said, and finally, the players have to trust each other that they are going to be where they're supposed to be. Well, I can't help but remember the wheel route where Vinny was beat on the wheel route and Robert Lester knew where the ball was going. And he left his man to go try to help Vinny because he knew Vinny was beat. And at the end of the play, Vinny looked up at Robert like, hey, man, you got in my way. I had this guy. And Robert Lester's looking at him like, no, you did not. And so I found it interesting that Saban said that in the coach's show because I think it's a maturity thing. I guess what I'm trying to what I think is the biggest headline here is like the 2010 team with all of the new players, even if they were playing some last year, they're still trying to get the maturity and the discipline and the execution to do it the same way every single time. And that is what I think bit them in the ass in this ballgame.
I think a couple things there. I think that just because 95, 98% of the discussion on the message boards is that we should have run, shouldn't have run, that doesn't make it wrong. And so I do think that if we just want the back of the napkin analysis, I do think if we had attempted to run four times there, that we'd probably score. I also think that probably, while I don't categorically disagree with what you're saying, I wonder if you're not waxing a little philosophical on that. And I think somewhere in the middle, and if we want some deeper analysis than just, hey, run the ball, and we want some more of the why, you know, I'm going to bring up what we talked about even before the game, and that's the number of plays that we played last week. And we touched upon this, and I wish I'd hit this more last week, but go back, listen to the tape. 88 plays on defense last week when our season average was 53. So that's 35 more snaps. That's the equivalent of four or five, you know, six overtime periods that the defense played. And that 53 as our average, even that is a little bit overstated because we had quite a number of blowouts where the starters didn't play in the fourth quarter. And so you come right after that, an exhausted defense having played that many more snaps. We didn't just need to run the ball on that possession. We needed to run the ball all night long. And we needed to do that for two reasons: to keep their quarterback off the field, but to keep our defense off the field. And one conversation you and I had walking to the stadium is that it's almost diabolical. Our play calling, the number of runs and the number of passes are almost always exactly even. And I said, Tom, coming into this game, because the state of our defense, if we play even, we lose. And it turns out we had, 34 pass attempts and 31 rush attempts. So we were right at even, and we lost the game.
Well, I mean, I just want to point out that I think the play, what Coach Saban was trying to say is we got in that hole at 20-0 for all of those other reasons I just mentioned.
Sure.
And you especially can't do that against a team like this. Now, I don't disagree with what you're saying. I just think that other was a bigger point. To go back for me, to go back to the running for a second, I truly think that they didn't even start the game out right. I mean, Coach Saban says on his coach's show, we told them that we were fortunate to win the coin toss. This is a team that has scored on their opening possession in most of the games this year. And so it is crucial for us to come out and seize the momentum and get points on the board. What do we do the first couple series? We throw the ball two out of the three downs and we have three and outs.
Yep.
And so to your point, I went back and looked at the stats and I said, okay, what did LSU and Florida do? Now, obviously, we know they were close games, but to feed into your point for a second, when LSU won 24-19, 45 rushes, they attempted 29 passes. Now, they only rushed for 234 yards on 45 carries. But guess what? They kept pounding the ball. What did Florida do when they won 20-17? 48 rushes for only 200 yards. They only attempted 17 passes. So to your point, it needed to be that 40, 45 rushes. And people will go back and look at the stats and they'll say, okay, well, we rushed for 3.9 yards and they rushed for 3.6 yards. You know, we really weren't establishing the run. Well, guess what? We weren't averaging 6 yards a carry like we have been, but this is a situation where if we just run the ball 15 to 20 more times for 3.5 yards a carry, you're going to bust one, right? And the other thing real quick that's interesting to me, I was surprised, even at the lack of running the ball that we did do, we had 65 offensive plays. They only had 77. I'm not saying that's not a lot. It is. But compared to the number of plays they've had against other opponents, the disparity, our disparity was much better than most other teams they've played. We almost won the time of possession, surprisingly.
Yeah, it was. I was surprised at how close it was. They won it, but it was closer than I really truly expected it to be. I you know, a couple things, right? We got on to LSU last week about, you know, they rushed the ball so many times but had a lower average, but they were effective in keeping the ball away from us. I would have loved to put up that type of rushing stat line. Let's rush it, you know, 9 or 12 more times, even if we're still maintaining our 3.9 average. Those are minutes off the clock. Those are plays that we're getting that they're not. And I think that makes a material difference in the outcome of the game. And so, again, that's a simplistic view, but I'm making it more. I'm not just saying run on those possessions on the 6 yard line. We should have, but I think the running game, the approach to the running game, should have been a game long approach, not just on that one drive.
Oh sure. And if we do it
through the game, if we rush 40, 42, 45 times, that ball on the 6 yard line is a moot point.
No, but here, to your point, right? And we'll go to defense in a minute because it's equally frustrating.
Sure.
But what is what's so frustrating about all this, because obviously we're not coaches, we're not going to be qualified to be coaches, and people make all these comments like, well, what do you freaking know? Well, what's crazy is it's like, okay, I'm not a coach, but they're studying all the tape, right? They study everybody that they played. I mean, we can go, you know, because their offense scores so quickly, right? It affords the other team a chance to run a lot of plays. So just to add to this for a quick second, when they played Ole Miss ran the ball 44 times, Louisiana Tech 42, Arkansas 39. So six teams on their schedule attempted basically 40 carries, to your point. Mm-hmm. And what I was even surprised at is the number of plays. You know, it's intuitive, right, when you start really thinking about this and analyzing it. But because these other guys score so quickly, you know, on two or three play drives, it gives the other team a chance to run so many more plays. And so I was shocked when I looked back and said, okay, they let Arkansas run 98 plays. They let Ole Miss run 79. Louisiana Tech ran 101 plays against them. LSU 74. So my point is, they have four teams on their schedule before they played us that had at least run 74 plays against them. And so it's like, okay. So it's like, okay, real quick, guys, they showed you the blueprint. Run the ball 45 times, you get 80 plays, and you keep the ball away from their quarterback. Why couldn't we do that?
Well, exactly. And you take the fact that their opening game of the season was postponed. And so they've not had a bye week all season. This is their third week in a row traveling, their fifth out of 7 weeks traveling. Let's keep that defense on the field, because they're going, you know, they're suspect. They're maybe a little thin anyways. They've given up a lot of points to a lot of other teams. Our strength is our offensive line. Their defense is perhaps their weakness. Let's keep those two units on the field together as long as possible. I love the idea of balance, and we talk about balance, and we spend a lot of time about being multiple and being balanced and being able to keep a defense on its heels. Just because you can do both doesn't mean every week you need to divide that evenly.
Well, I agree with that. And, you know, this was not the game for that balance. And, you know, just to beat up this rushing dead horse for a little bit more, you know, Gary Danielson talks in the, you know, when we got to come back and watch the tape, he talked in the analysis about how the defensive coordinator kidded about the fact that he basically was going to play five defensive linemen. Now, I went back and looked at it. He ended up running seven out there total in the participation chart. But for the most part, he said he was going to rotate five. Mm-hmm. We rotated 10, mm-hmm. okay, on the front line. And the guy over Barrett Jones, the defensive coordinator, talked about his thing was going to be speed, and it gave Barrett some fits. Mm-hmm. But he was 275 pounds. Barrett's 310. They're two defensive linemen, one of which was a true freshman. They're two defensive ends, 245. They had two linebackers under 215. It's like, hello, we got the size here. No wonder we were sitting there watching 6 and 7 and 8 yard runs. So when I went back and looked at that, it's like, once again, it's like, I'm not a coach. But it's like, wait a minute, look what these other teams have done. And then look at the size of their front seven. It's like, oh my gosh, what did y'all miss, coaches?
I don't have an answer for it. It's very frustrating. You know, like we said, you know, walk into the stadium, we need to run the ball here a little bit more. This is a team that we think that we can run it against, and we need to run it against. And again, it's not only their quarterback off the field. And look, I don't take anything away from the way they played. They were phenomenal, and I think we'll hit more on that when we go to our defense. But keep him off the field, but just as importantly, keep our defense off the field, because we've got to save their legs. We've got to save their snaps.
Well, that's true. And there's two other quick things I want to mention here on the offensive side of the ball. First of all, is I think that not only coming out of the gate to start the game real quick, but in the third quarter, right? You know, after he peels the paint in the locker room with I'm sure his halftime speech, the defense comes out and gets his stops right away.
Yes.
And what do we come back and do?
Ugh.
We throw the ball. And so what's so frustrating is if you go and look at the plays, because you and I typically go and analyze all the, you know, just run down the plays and, okay, you know, what play did they do where? First quarter, third quarter, passes more than runs. Second quarter, fourth quarter, runs more than passes.
Right. And that's where we put up the points. And to your point, we come out of half and force them into a three and out. We go three and out as well.
Right.
But we rush for 5 yards and have two incompletions. So we're sitting there at second and five.
David, go look at the first series of the game. You'll see the same thing.
Yep.
One rush for five, right? So second and five. Ooh, boy, that's an easy deal. And then the other thing I wonder, going back and looking at the tape, is we had so many big plays in the passing game. I mean, basically, AJ, he just didn't have enough arm for two throws that would have been touchdowns. Do you think they saw something in the tape from the secondary that just made them have to attempt so many passes? Because, I mean, Cooper, with all of his bum ankle, he had the one touchdown. The other one, AJ just underthrew the ball. The final play to Kenny, big play to Kenny Bell, AJ underthrew that too. I mean, we had three pass completions for over 50 yards in this ball game.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I think it was. I think we outsmarted ourselves. I think that, you know, everyone knows the key to beating this team is to line up and run the ball against them. A&M knows that that's their weakness. A&M knows that that's one of our strengths. And so they're going to stack the box, which they did, to stop the run. And we said, you know what? We're going to play action and we're going to throw over their heads. And we've had some success doing that against teams. And that's what we're going to do to these guys all night long because they're going to stuff the box. And so you're right. We had the 54-yarder to Cooper. Ironically, the pass to Bell was 54 yards as well. He had to, that ball was a little short, and Bell had to, you know, hold up for it. And those are big strikes. Those are big explosive plays. And I can't necessarily be mad at those plays. It was just, it's what we're talking about. It's so much, right. It's so much of the passing and less of the running. I just think we outsmarted ourselves. I can see where you can come into that game plan. I can see the dots that connect to say, we're going to beat this team by passing and they're not going to expect that. But yes, as you were saying, it's overthinking it.
Well, real quick, one other comment. You know, we've thought during different points in this coaching staff about, you know, the lack of adjustments coming out of the locker room. I mean, if you go look at the stats, the stats bear it out. I mean, the third quarter points this team puts up is atrocious compared to how much they're blistering it in the second and fourth quarter.
Yes.
If you come out with those dots connected in the first quarter and it doesn't work, you come out in the second quarter running the ball, it gets you back in the game because it sets up your play action. Then why don't you learn from that in the locker room and in the third quarter, you don't make those same mistakes again. Yeah. See, that's what I don't get. If you overthought it and you were cutesy and you said, oh, we're going to get them here to start the game, well, then, okay, you need to make a change. What did you think about offense? Anything else that jumped out at you on the offensive side of the ball?
Well, I want to hit what you said there a little bit. They got us down, you know, 20-0. And normally that will break. How's this for our, you know, maybe ironic? Normally that will take a team out of their personality. We took ourselves out of our personality. And when we were down, that should have jolted us back into our personality. You know,
it did in the
like
second
you said,
quarter.
You know, make the adjustments at yep. half to, you know what, this passing thing, we've got it down to a 6-point ball game. Let's take the ball out of their hand. Let's rest our defense. Even at that point, we had the opportunity to adjust, and we did not. One other thing I want to hit on defense, and I'm not beating the guy up, but I really feel bad for TJ Yeldon. He's a true freshman. He's a trooper player. This is 2 weeks in a row, and I'm not piling on the guy, but you know we're going to call it out. This is 2 weeks in a row where at a critical point in the ball game, he has had a fumble in the fourth quarter, both on drives that could have led to go-ahead game separation. Opposing team scored on those turnovers both times. I mean, he's an all-star player, going to be a freshman All-America caliber player. Not mad at him at all, but I just – you got to point that out. This is something I hope it's a learning opportunity for him.
Well, I think the first – you know, I think against LSU it wasn't his fault. I mean, when you went back and watched the replay, A.J. didn't put it in his breadbasket. That was all A.J.'s fault. Coach said on the coaching show and on this particular game that T.J. was carrying the ball too low. He wasn't carrying the ball up high like Burns teaches his runners to do. I mean, Burns teaches his runners to keep it very high up in the rib cage so that you can control it more with your sure. with your arms. But when you go back and watch the replay there, what's kind of frustrating is he's been picking up the spin move from Eddie Lacy, right?
Yes, he has.
Well,
been.
If you go back and watch that run, and this is the maturity thing, right? He's a very even-keeled kid. I love the kid. Mm-hmm. But this is the, damn, we don't have the Jalston Fowler, so the freshman's got to be put into these difficult situation grinds week after week, and we got to count on you for 15 carries a game. Somebody's trying to yank the ball as he spins. The guy's grabbing the ball. He starts to spin. Another guy drills him in the back with his helmet. And that's why he coughed the ball up. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, you're learning the spin. But when a guy's going after the ball, screw the spin, get both hands on the ball and go straight to the ground.
Yep.
You got your 6 yards. You're done. Right.
Yep.
And instead he's caught up in the spin and I'm doing this. I don't even think he was thinking about this guy over here is trying to rip the ball out as I'm spinning.
No, and that's something that, you know, he's going to have to get back to where he, you know, the spin move's a nice move, but, you know, if it's not part of your style, if it's not part of what you do, then, you know, you have to be careful. You have to be careful with it. And so he put the ball on the ground, you know, critical point in the ball game. And so just wanted to call that out. Anything on offense else that you saw?
Yeah, I guess one other thing I want to mention is I think early in the game when they had that interception, when Kenny Bell coughed up the ball, you know, we've talked about how happy we are with Kenny Bell being used in the way that he's accustomed to being used on these go routes.
Sure, down the field.
He's not your 3rd-and-7 over the middle kind of guy. That's not his game yet. You know, I think Kevin Norwood getting hurt in this game really didn't help, because Cooper was already banged up. And when Norwood went down, you had to bring Marvin Shinn in. You know, that's the other thing that's so, I guess, important to talk about on the offensive side of the ball is everything we've just beat up here with this analysis. You would think that we've got 5 healthy wide receivers to come into this game with this plan. So when you talk about overthinking it, I guess they thought, well, gosh, Texas A&M is not going to dream we're going to throw the ball because we got 2 or 3 guys, you know, not even practicing during the week because they're so hurt.
Well, and let's be fair to that too. And this gets to, you know, maybe some of this kind of rounds out the offense, going back to maybe the overachievement, is we are severely banged up at running back. And so if the best way to beat this team is to pound them with the running hammer, gosh, we only got 3 guys on scholarship. You know, 2 of them, especially Lacey, have already been banged up a little bit. And so maybe we're not equipped to do that. And so let's lead them to believe that that's what we're going to do, but let's try this passing attack. And so we're thin at running back and we're thin at receiver. And so, you know, it's just two points of frustration.
Oh, sure. But I was surprised given everything. I mean, I was surprised that, you know, we had more offensive yards than they did. We had 431 yards. They had 418. Mm-hmm. I mean, not to read stats here. I mean, when you come back and look at the game, were you surprised to see that we were averaging more yards per play than they did?
Well, we had some of those big plays, and you know that's gonna boost up the average. We had a lot of 3-and-outs too, and so that's gonna keep the play count down. You know, Karen had a career day. He threw for 309 yards. I mean, that's a career day. 34 attempts. That also kind of gets back to,
there's the career high too. That's where we knew it was the problem, right?
Yeah.
That's his career high in attempts.
You know, I can't quote the numbers that you use precisely, but you know, the ideal day for McCarron is, you know, 16 of 21 for, yep, you know, 240, 260.
Yep.
And so exactly. What, you know, how do you accomplish that? You don't throw it, you don't throw it 34 times.
And that's what's so ironic is they rushed the ball 46 times on us.
Yeah.
They did to us what we should have done to them.
Right.
And what about defense?
Well, you know, here's my thought on defense. We play a lot of music over the speakers and just kind of a lot of the rock music and kind of set the atmosphere. And so at one point in the second quarter, you know, they bring out, you know, the Ozzy Osbourne Crazy Train, and it felt like they were making an editorial statement. Because, I mean, we're down 20 to nothing. It's like, golly, you know, it's one thing. Okay, we're going to get popped in the face. And then, okay, now we're going to get popped in the face again. And yet even a third time, even before we get our pants on, we're down by 20. And then when we finally get some rhythm and start moving the ball, you can see where, I mean, I hate to say it, it's running the ball again, but it's, you know, you can see where, yeah, we can move the ball on this team. And this, and I even said a couple times, let's drive the ball down the field 5 yards at a time. We can do that all night long. And so, again, you asked me about defense.
Yep.
It was a crazy train kind of situation where, holy, what is this down 20 to nothing stuff? But the team and the fans which I was probably most impressed about that. And this is where, you know, we're all kind of have gotten accustomed to expecting to win again. The fans really rallied behind the team. There was, you know, not a lot of booing.
There was no booing. There was no quit. There was no give up. I mean, what did you think about? I mean, if you go back and look as we were breaking out the offense, the same thing with the defense. You know, he talked about staying in your pass rushing lanes and keeping contained. And, you know, you talked last week about you think Hubbard's going to, you know, Hubbard type of guy is going to keep contained and we're going to, you know, keep him in check. Well, he finished with 18 carries for 105 yards. But on those first two drives, he had a 29-yard backbreaker and a 32-yard backbreaker. And so if you take out those 60 yards, the rest of the game, 16 carries for 40 yards. Now, somebody would say, oh, well, that's easy. That's just numbers. My point is that, once again, we followed the LSU blueprint as the game wore on to try to contain him a whole lot better, I think. Starting with the second quarter, I think we got much better with that.
Oh, absolutely. And look, we held him to 9 points in the second half. That's actually pretty good. I mean, they come out and they're leading, you know, 20-0 in the first quarter, and we hold them to 9
for the rest of the game.
That's impressive, and it's similar to what, you know, LSU was down by 12, and, you know, however Texas A&M scored the rest of the game, they didn't score quite at that rate. They slowed way down. They got their points, and then, you know, kind of nickeled and dimed on top of that. You know, the defense in the second half, or maybe for three quarters of the game, really, they continued to drive the ball between the 20s, but we kept them, you know, for the by and large, out of the end zone, off the scoreboard. 9 points, you know, I wish we could have held them to 9 points a half for the game.
Right. Well, not to, you know, I'm just going to call out a position here, okay, as opposed to individuals. I think, like we talked about against LSU, this game exposed our weakness in the back of the defense. LSU was a couple things LSU brought to their defense that we don't have. First of all, they have a better pass rush than we do.
Sure.
They got two marquee defensive ends.
Sure.
So they were able to close the pocket, right? They shrunk the pocket on him, and they were fast enough that he couldn't run around them. Well, then I think in the back of the secondary, when they dropped into zone and they dropped 5 or 6 guys into zone, I'm sorry, they play a better zone with the talent level of their 5 or 6 deep than we do currently with the 5 or 6 that we're running.
Yeah, I was a little frustrated and disappointed.
Is that a nice way to say that real quick? You understand what I meant by that? I mean, our zone is just, there's too many gaps.
Right. Well, it's just people out of position, and we have people doing things that even at this stage of the season, they've not spent a whole lot of time doing in live games. I mean, we played dime almost all night long.
Where was Nick Perry?
We played a lot of nickel. We played a lot of dime and put Vinny more in a linebacker position. We played, and you know, I think you noticed it a couple of times, we played a dime, so that's 6 defensive backs. We played a dime with 2 corners. And then it's almost like we did not have enough corners. And then there were times that we'd have a third corner in there in the dime. And so, you know, Nick Perry's a safety, and so, you know, he could have been back there at different times. I think it went to a lot of assignment, because we had people playing different roles on the back half of the defense. And again, I just think we overthought it in the way that we moved people around.
But here's what I mean by that. Nick Perry started the year as a starter. I think Nick Perry from last week to this week lost his starting job to HaHa. That's my opinion. And so we started the game in a the two starting safeties in this ball game was Robert Lester and HaHa. And so what I find interesting is we've talked about Vinny at the line of scrimmage versus if you get him in space, correct?
Sure.
All I'm saying is I think Nick Perry was in for a few plays at the end of the game. I'm not saying they haven't all had their challenges. I'll say it that way. But I'm just saying for 95% of the game, we had Vinny in there. We had Ha-Ha and Robert Lester playing a cover two. I mean, let me go back to one example. There was a play where Gary Danielson pointed out in the third quarter when they were driving between the 20s before they missed the field goal, where they had five wide receivers in the game. They had started the game that way.
Mm-hmm.
Five wides. The first time they brought five wides in at the beginning of the game, we didn't have John Fulton. But then we brought him into the game the next time they ran it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got cover two, Ha-Ha and Robert Lester back deep. We've got CJ and Vinny in the middle, dropping back 10 yards. And then we've got Ballou and Milner and Fulton. Literally, Robert Lester was over here behind Ballou and Milner with two guys. Ha-Ha's over here giving Fulton support behind his one guy. The tight end, whatever the tight end's name was. Yeah, Ryan Swope, I guess, was his name. He sat there on Vinny and ran right by Vinny to do a crossing pattern, which should never work on a cover two. Ha-Ha goes over to help Fulton by the sideline, doesn't even recognize that Vinny needs help. Robert Lester on the other hash runs 25 yards and just barely gets there late. That's when they called that personal foul on Ha-Ha. They gave him that 15 more yards.
Right.
But there's an example of we were in a cover two, which should protect the middle of the field. And this guy's able to split the two safeties with a 25-yard crossing pattern that takes forever to develop?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yeah. Swope's a receiver, so he was probably lined up in the slot. But that doesn't change the point that you're making. I don't have an answer for that. It goes back to, and I hate to kind of repeat content from last week, but it goes back to, who's a player from last year's team that we really would have missed and really could have used. And, someone like a Menzi is that was in the system and could be very versatile in how he plays. Milliner is that kind of guy. I sense that he just knows where everyone should be and that we use him in a lot of different ways because he can be used in a lot of different ways. We don't have that other than him. We don't have someone like that that's as athletic as that can be versatile because he understands the concepts. Menzi and Milliner together, I think, would be a phenomenal pairing. But we end up with a lot of guys that have some talent. They just don't know multiple. And so we bring in Geno Smith, a freshman cornerback. But we're very limited schematically what we can do when he's in the game.
Yeah, he was only in there one or two plays.
Right.
And that was it.
And that's not being mad at him.
No, he's a freshman.
He's not supposed to know it all. But when he knows three packages, guys, that's what we can run.
It goes back to overthinking yourself. I guess my point to you is in different times of this game, when they came out with their five wides, we had three corners and two safeties covering their five wides. Those two safeties, that's a mismatch. And so to your point, I'd rather bring in the freshman, bring in Geno and give him safety help over the top, right? I'm sorry. Your safeties in space with a fast slot wide receiver is just not a good matchup for most football teams.
Right.
There was one other thing I wanted to ask you about on defense here. Is not only do I think they picked on our safeties with the wheel route to Vinny and the crossing pattern, which was over the top over Vinny, but when they saw John Fulton come in the game, we moved Milner from the field, from the boundary corner over there next to Ballou, and we brought Fulton in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And when we brought Fulton in the game, He had to cover Mike Evans, who was 6'5", 6'6". He had to have 6 inches on him. And I remember asking you in the game, I said, why don't we take Milner and Fulton and trade places? Because Mike Evans stayed over there by himself out wide to the right. And I didn't go back and count it, David. But on the last drive, they picked on him 3 times. I think they threw that way 8, 9, or 10 times in the ball game. And so our two most experienced corners are over here covering somebody that he's not even looking toward. And play after play after play, let's throw it to the 6'5 guy being covered by the 5'10 third string cornerback. And we didn't adjust.
I thought, and that's fine. I don't disagree with you. I think that Fulton played okay.
I think Fulton played the best game he's played of his career. This is not a knock on Fulton. This is a knock on the coaching staff to say, this is Milner's position. We move him over next to Blue to bring Fulton in. And maybe this goes to your comment of what they've learned to do, right? Mm-hmm. Because you just said you think Milner's your best guy, right? They've only got 1 6'5" wide receiver. I'd prefer to have my number one cornerback covering their 6'5" receiver.
And it's not – I want to be careful there. He probably – I don't know. In straight coverage, maybe Blue's just the best straight cover guy. But the best cornerback we have in terms of being versatile.
In the program. Been a while. In the
program. Yes.
That's no knock to Blue.
No. He's first year in the system. If anything, it's a knock on Fulton because, you know, he and Milner came in together as freshmen.
I think Fulton was picked on time after time after time at the end of that ball game, and after the first couple missteps, he won the last 5 or 6 of those battles.
Yes, yes.
And now, considering Coach Saban said he was the only injury in the game with a significant turf toe that swole up big time.
And he kept playing.
I think he had the best game of his career.
Yes.
And so what I'm pissed about is he got thrust in a bad situation time after time after time after time with no safety help over the top. And when the safety did come, he was late time after time after time.
He, you know what he did? He had the Marquise Johnson game.
He did.
Where South Carolina kept picking on him with Alshon Jeffries, Alshon's freshman year, and what, 3 straight fade patterns because they said, we're going to beat this guy. And, you know, of course, he batted it away each time. I think Fulton had the Marquise Johnson game. And so I hope that, that becomes a springboard confidence-wise over the rest of his career.
Oh, sure. But just to comment on this for a second, if you don't really maybe agree with me or see why they didn't shift Milner over, you know, why wasn't the safety directed to help more over the top there? Because truly, the safety was late numerous times there.
Yeah, you would think you'd shade the safety, you know, to one side. I've got 2 cornerbacks over here. And then I'm going to shade a safety over here to, top end support over, you know, Fulton and a 6'5" receiver. I can't tell you.
Hey, what else about defense? Because I do think that we got some good pressure on him. I think toward the end of the game, the reason he was able to develop some of those long pass plays is I think Saban beat into their head after those 2 big rushes that containment was more important than getting to the quarterback.
Yes.
And so sometimes he said, you better not let the tackle run you past the quarterback because you're leaving a gap there. So right. I think toward the end of the game, we were playing more safety with our defensive line than really going after the quarterback.
And that's kind of what we said would happen, you know, last week is that, you know, we would rush, we'd set the edge and then just kind of hang out and keep them contained. And we struggled to do that early. We did that a little bit better late. You know, a couple of times, this is related but different. I thought it was interesting. I saw Hubbard at a middle linebacker position a couple times. I thought that was interesting. I've not seen that over his career. It just seemed that we were trying to do different things to give them some different looks.
Well, hey, one other thing I do want to point out is because we were trying to keep more guys fresh DJ Pettaway came in very early, and Duvall came in very early. I remember one play in particular where, I mean, the other thing we didn't talk about real quick is Texas A&M was throwing the kitchen sink at us.
Oh, absolutely.
They were throwing every play they could possibly throw. And so I remember one play at about the 40-yard line in the first half. Do you remember where Johnny Football, which I know you love that name, threw the ball to the wide receiver in the right flats, and then he flared out to the left to get the ball thrown back to him?
Yes.
And Duvall was playing on that side of the ball, and he had the discipline to stay at home and to tackle him in the back, or hold him up long enough to get some help to tackle him for no gain. That play jumped out at me of like, man, now there's a cool play by a freshman.
Yeah, that was nice. That was a good play. Like you said, a freshman. That was about his only recorded stat. And like you said, he was in early. It didn't seem like he played a whole lot, but he was definitely in early, which was good to see. Pagan was in early. It seemed that we tried to keep some fresh horses on defense. And I was surprised at how easy of a time we had at rotating personnel in. We didn't seem to struggle rotating who we wanted in at different points. I think one time we had to call a timeout because we didn't have Jesse in there. But that was the only time it seemed that we struggled with that. And given that's their objective, that's A&M's objective, I was pleased.
Well, it does help a little bit that now this year, the officials are standing over the ball when they see the offense sub in players. Yes. And they don't move off the ball until the defense gets a chance to bring in their own people.
Yeah. And that's a good point. This is, I don't know how many people saw this, how many people noticed this, but the crew that was calling the game, ESPN has this weekly thing where they do all access and they go into different programs and such. What they did, their all access last week was SEC officials. And so it was neat to get to see that last week. And the crew that was on that show was the same crew that worked our game.
Okay.
And I say that really for no other point than they talked about on the show the substitution. And they also talked about this being the first year that the officials have headphones on so that they can communicate to each other. And so you got the side judges helping the referee and the umpire know who's subbing, where it's coming from, so they know to stay over the ball and to watch for that. So that was just more neat observation, I guess. When you brought that up, it made me think of that. But you know, however it happened, it seemed that we had an easier time rotating personnel in and out than maybe I imagined we would have.
Oh sure. Anything else at defense before we go to special teams?
No, take us to, you know what, Mosley had 14 tackles. And so for a guy that was kind of stoned out last week because of the style of play, again, a very frustrating thing, it seemed almost the opposite happened this week. Nico was stoned out, and CJ comes in and puts up a number of plays. So, you know, a nod to CJ. That's not my mini game ball, but a nod to CJ because we spent so much time talking about him last week. What did you see on special teams?
You know, special teams, I think Texas A&M did a really good job of, you know, kicking the ball out of the end zone on kickoffs and not giving us a chance to really do anything. I mean, we only had one punt return for 5 yards, and we only had two chances for kickoffs. And so we only had three opportunities to do something with the ball. We did see Christian Jones at the punt return. We didn't see Cyrus.
Yep.
Thought that was kind of interesting.
Yep.
To me, the biggest thing that jumped out for me was Cody Mendel. I mean, Cody, forgive me for not starting with you, man. But, you know, once again, you would think in a game where we had so much difficulty that we would have attempted more than four punts, right? We talked about the LSU game where he had, what, 7 or 8 punts?
Yep.
We only had 4 punts, but boy, we made them count. He had a 60 for a long, and after 4 punts, he had a 56.5 average.
Yes.
Man, these last 2 weeks, he's come up big time.
He really has. And so I had 4 things noted that I wanted to hit on special teams, and you just hit 2 of them. Cody Mandel, hats off. You know, Christian Jones being in for Cyrus. I thought that was interesting. Cyrus Jones had been playing really, really well back there. And so I think that speaks to, you know, maybe the coaches wanted, you know, Christian out there. Maybe they think he's a little more dynamic at the position. Maybe it had
Is it the fumble?
That's what I was going to say. Did it have something to do with that lost ball? I don't know, but that was something that kind of jumped out at me as, oh, you know, Cyrus is back there or Christian's back there. Is it he out of the doghouse or, you know, what exactly is that? I noticed on kickoff returns, and sometimes this stuff is easier to do when you're at the stadium and you can take your binoculars and you can look because the TV doesn't really care about who's on special teams. But, you know, sometimes we do. And so on the kickoff return unit, we did have Yeldon. I noticed we had Yeldon and Drake each, you know, I guess a quarter of the, you know, a third of the way in on that second line as if they were anticipating or preparing for an onside kick. And so I thought that was interesting to see him on there. And then I think the biggest, and this will go to the, you know, 98% of mouth breathers on message boards, but I don't think we can talk about special teams without kind of shaking our head and saying, you know, freshman being freshman, Tyler Hayes, offsides, lining up offsides on that punt.
He didn't line up offsides. He jumped. He jumped into the neutral zone. And what really was interesting about that in the coaches' show is Saban said, we told them they're going to do a hard count. Yep. They are going to try to draw you off. So it's like, man, we told you. You still did it.
Yeah.
But like you said, though, part of it, I think, is the challenges of having to have so many freshmen contribute. And we talked about that at the beginning of the season, how surprised we were as to how many freshmen are having to contribute. And maybe, David, this speaks to only having 9 seniors on your football team.
Well, it, you know, the old saying was, you know, you lose a game for every freshman you play. And I'm not pointing at Tyler Hayes because it's not that simple.
No.
But it what that saying does, what that cliche does, is it points to freshmen are going to make mistakes. And it's not because they're bad players. It's because they're new to competing at this level. And there's nerves. And there's a million different things that together contribute to mistakes being made. In this instance, you know, there was the mistake by Tyler Hayes. I had the opportunity after the game to drink some brown water with one of our buddies, Greg, contributor to the site. And the analogy that he used that I really like is that, you know, they were going to punt the ball and we were going to get it back with, you know, relatively good field position, maybe middle of the field. And, you know, he likened it to basketball where you just want to get that, you know, get that 3-pointer off at the end of the game. And if you clank it, you clank it, but you at least got that last look at the basket, that last shot. And that because we were offsides there, gave them the first down, we deprived ourselves of having to, you know, an opportunity to get that last second three off.
Oh, sure. That's a good analogy.
So that's, you know, again, not trying to pile on another freshman, but, you know, that's very frustrating. You never would have liked to lose the game, but you would have liked to have gone out guns a-blazing.
Oh, absolutely.
And so to jump off sides and then watch them do the victory formation. All right.
No, hey, that's true.
Give me your game balls.
Man, on offense, I kind of really wasn't really sure where to go with this because we're always trying not to do a headliner, but I'm going to have to give it to Amari Cooper. And he's a freshman, and he's kind of become a headliner, so it's probably, you know, a foul on me. But Amari Cooper, I'm sorry, man. You're showing that tenacity to play with pain. I mean, you're sitting here hobbling a little better at the start of this game than 2 weeks ago. But as the game went on, it got worse and worse and worse, and they keep sending you deep, and you're still beating their cornerbacks, and you say, okay, I just scored a touchdown, ref, here's the ball, and now you limp bad as you possibly can over to the bench. I'm sorry. For him to have, you know, 6 catches for 136 yards in the condition he's in, man, what a warrior. He's got to get our game ball. He's got to get yours too.
Well, no, I've gotten written it down here. Mini game ball offense, Cooper injured, 136 yards. We saw at one point he took himself out of the game. So, yeah, I'm boring. I'm not going to repeat everything that you said there. My nod is to Cooper as well.
All right, what about defense? Who do you give it to there?
I was maybe sandbagging a little bit earlier. My defensive game ball goes to Fulton. Five tackles, four pass breakups. They picked on him, and he rose to the occasion. And on top of that, he was playing much of the game with, as Coach said, a significant turf toe. He will probably miss this week. He may miss, depending upon the severity. That's the same injury now that Lacey had surgery for, and Lacey missed significant playing time last season. So let's not discount the fact that this dude's out there as a cover corner with that type of injury. And at least as a running back, you conceptually know where you're going. As a defensive back, you're going where the receiver takes you. And so to have that ability to play in that pain and to play so successfully, mini game ball, John Fulton.
Well, that's a good one, man. That was going to be my first one, but I will give him a nod as well because I think it's the best game of his career. But I'm also going to give a shout out to Jesse Williams. Williams, when I looked at the stat sheet, I could not believe my eyes. While he did not have any solo tackles, as nose guards typically don't, they typically maybe have one assist. He had seven assists, one tackle for loss, which was a sack. And there was one play where a wide receiver beat, maybe it was one of our safeties, and he was kind of running loose down the sideline. And Jesse Williams chased the play down on the right sideline and basically tackled this guy 15 yards down the field, just lunged at him. And so I think he was all over the field. And for your nose guard to have seven assisted tackles, he played a hell of a ball game.
Sure. And in his spare time, he was catching some reps at fullback.
Absolutely. I just wish he would have been in that last series. Hey, what about what about special teams there? Who gets the ball?
I think you got to go Cody Mandel.
I agree with that.
I read somewhere where, 56.5 was the most useless stat in the game. And I get the point that the author was making there. It seemed that due to the play of our defense, we wasted such good punting performance. But it doesn't take away from the fact that it was a good punting performance.
Not at all. I would agree with that. What do you think about our next opponent? I don't want to spend too much time with this, but what do you think about this next game?
Well, two things jump out at me when I think of Western Carolina. And so one is, this season they're struggling. I did not see the outcome of their game this most recent weekend, but I know that they were 1-7 coming into the weekend. And so from that standpoint, and then just our team has the coach's attention in a way that you wouldn't believe. I don't know what our biggest margin this year has been. Maybe it was the 52-0 against Arkansas, I would assume. It's going to be something like that. I wrote down 56-3. I think we would shed this team. The only thing, God, I hate to even say this out loud. The last time we played Western Carolina, Brody broke his knee against this team. And so,
man, I can't believe you even said that.
So you play a team like this, and it's the type of game you shouldn't worry about. But man, every game, and so we're banged up. Da 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 da. I think we blow this team out, but I just hope we get out of it with no more injuries.
Well, I just want to point for the record that the last couple weeks, I do recall that my score has been a little closer than yours on the calling it here. So I want you to win this one here. I'm going to say that your analogy of last year Georgia Southern is very correct. Remember how they put up the 300 yards or whatever and scored the 21 points and then we tore up Auburn? I want us to break 60. We didn't do that last year. We haven't done that this year. But I just want everybody to play, and I want all these banged up guys to play very little. So I'm looking for like a 63-7 game.
Okay.
I want this to be a laugher. It's an early, crappy start time. Let's get this thing over and go have a drink.
I think I completely agree with that. So cheers to that idea.
Anything else you got tonight, man?
No, I don't. I don't have anything else tonight. I hope that we're all in better spirits this time next week.
All right, man. Well, I enjoyed it.
All right. Me too. Hey, thanks for listening. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Check us out on the website. Sign up for our newsletter for a chance to win a free Alabama Football Podcast t-shirt, and roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, roll Tide.